The battle lines in Syria are being redrawn. Foreign-backed insurgents are turning their guns on each other. It's becoming increasingly clear that what was continually portrayed by the West as a growing sectarian conflict is actually Al-Qaeda becoming more active in Syria. Join us in this edition of The Debate as we try to find out the root causes behind this infighting, the ever-growing presence of Al-Qaeda, and what lies ahead for Syria and the region.
Scores of foreign-backed insurgents have been killed in Syria following days of fierce infighting. The clashes have pitted the Western-backed militants led by the so-called Free Syrian Army, or FSA, against the Al-Qaeda-affiliated insurgents called the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL. The clashes started after insurgents led by the FSA attacked checkpoints and bases controlled by the ISIL. The militant group is accused of horrific crimes against the civilian population in its controlled areas in Syria's northern provinces of Aleppo and Idlib. It also stands accused of jailing and even executing Syrians who oppose their rule. The ISIL, which was created in Iraq back in 2004 in the aftermath of the US-led invasion of the country, moved into Syria in 2013 to join the ranks of extremists fighting Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
And that's what we're having now. The fact that these criminal groups are killing each other is a sign that they've failed to topple Assad, and now they're turning on each other because they have no place else to go.
The extremist group, which according to many analysts has been funded and armed by Saudi Arabia, has also been involved in terrorist attacks in Lebanon and Iraq. It claimed last Thursday's deadly terror attack in southern Beirut, which claimed at least six lives. Extremists affiliated with this group have also been clashing with Iraqi troops and local tribesmen in the western Al-Anbar province. The recent infighting comes at a time when the fractured opposition groups outside of Syria try to form a unified position ahead of the Geneva II conference, slated for January the 22nd to 24th. On Sunday, the so-called Syrian National Coalition, or SNC, which is an anti-Assad group based in Turkey, re-elected Ahmed Jarbar as its leader. The re-election of Jarbar as a figure with close ties to Saudi Arabia comes at a sensitive time because the group is set to decide on taking part in the upcoming peace talks as a coalition. Syria has been gripped by deadly unrest since 2011. Western powers and their regional allies, namely Qatar, Saudi Arabia and Turkey, have been supporting the militants operating inside the country. Many analysts believe that the intensified infighting among insurgents reveals the deep divisions between these groups. Experts say the US and its Western allies speak of their opposition to Al-Qaeda and its heavy-handed tactics, but in practice, their long-term interests in the Middle East call for the existence of such groups.
Now let me begin by introducing our guest for this session of The Debate. First of all, joining us from New York is the founder of StopImperialism.com, Eric Dreitzer. And joining us from Washington is Lawrence J. Korb. He's with the Center for American Progress and also former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us here on Press TV. Now, Mr. Dreitzer, I'd like to pose my first question to you, and it's a simple one. What do you think is the reason that the foreign-backed insurgents have turned against each other 3 years after their insurgency against the Syrian government?
Well, I think that there's a number of reasons, and I think it would be presumptuous to make such a reductive argument as to say that this is entirely because they are losing. I think that it is much more complicated than that. For one, we should recognize that the Free Syrian Army has always been subordinated to the jihadi factions, or at least since the majority of the fighting has been going on for the last 2.5 years. We've had mainstream media reports going back to 2011 regarding the presence of Al-Qaeda elements, the establishment of al-Nusra in 2012, and the infiltration from both the Turkish side of the border, the Lebanese side of the border, and the Iraqi side of the border. So we've seen an infiltration of Syria by these al-Qaeda forces. Now, I think naturally there are certain elements within the so-called Free Syrian Army who understand that their interest is not going to be in some radical Islamic jihadi state that would be in which they would be persecuted and oppressed. But at the same time, they also recognize recognize that they are part and parcel of this attempt by Western powers to topple the Assad regime and to destabilize the region. Lest we forget the investigative piece from Le Monde of a few months ago in France, where they established that the networks and channels with which the Free Syrian Army is getting its weaponry, the black markets in Eastern Europe and elsewhere, using their Saudi connections, that these are precisely the same networks that are arming al-Qaeda groups in the very same region. So I think that making the distinction between these two can oftentimes be problematic. Certainly they are not the same exactly, but they represent very similar interests. And I think that we should also remember that this is against the backdrop of staggering losses against the Assad forces. We recently saw a report, I believe from 2 days ago, of more than 250 fighters surrendering their arms in a suburb of Damascus. This is just in one incident. So as we're seeing this this so-called rebellion toppling, it's beginning to eat away at itself, but it's also perpetuating itself as the conflict moves into its next stage.
Right. Now, let me bring in Mr. Korb. He's joining us from Washington. Mr. Korb, do you see the cause of this infighting as multifaceted, as Mr. Dreitzer has pointed out?
No, I think what's happened is the same thing that happened in Iraq. After the invasion of Iraq by the United States and its allies, the Sunnis were not happy with the way that Maliki was running the government, because he was a Shia, not taking care of their interests. Al-Qaeda, which wasn't there, came in, partnered with the Sunnis to fight the Maliki government. But then these extremists overstepped their bounds. Most of the Sunnis then turned to the United States and its allies to crush them, which in fact that we did. And then when the United States and its allies left Iraq, Maliki did not rule in an inclusive way. Some of the Sunnis were unhappy. You had the violence in Syria. The border basically was open. Maliki was allowing the Iranians to transport stuff over Iraqi air. The Sunnis were not happy with him. They were not happy with what he was doing to help Assad. So they rose up, and al-Qaeda has come back to try and take advantage of it. But here again, just as you're seeing in Syria, you're beginning to see the Sunnis, who don't like Maliki, like al-Qaeda much less, and they're partnering now with the Iraqi government to go after these extremists. And I think the same thing happened in Syria. The battle between Assad, who cracked down on these original protesters who weren't even armed, who were not at the least, you know, violent. When this started going, al-Qaeda saw another chance to take advantage of it, and they came in there. But again, they've overstepped their hand, just as they did in Iraq. And now the people, what I would call the moderate Sunnis, are turning against them as well there.
Well, Mr. Dreitzer, I put this question to you then. The West and some of its regional allies have continued to portray the situation in Syria as sectarian strife, just as Mr. Korb pointed out, an Alawite minority repressing the Sunni majority. But the rise of groups like Al-Nusra Front, like the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, as many point out, shows that the battle lines are not that clearly drawn. Do you see it that way too?
Well, indeed, and that's why I started my comments earlier by saying that this is a multifaceted issue. And I think that it should be noted, and I just want to say it for the record, that we should be very careful about this this line that's coming from the Western media regarding this infighting between the Free Syrian Army and the jihadi factions, because although there is some truth to that, there is an attempt by those who are attempting to shape public opinion in the West to make a distinction between the two, as if there are the good rebels, that being the Free Syrian Army, and the bad rebels, that being al-Qaeda, when in fact, if you look even at the most mainstream reports, the Brookings has released reports on the same subject, al-Qaeda and the jihadi factions are the only effective fighting force inside of Syria fighting against Assad. The Free Syrian Army has not only been in utter disarray, it is essentially seen as somewhat of a joke on the international stage. Most international observers understand understand that the conflict in Syria has metamorphosized, that it has changed in its very character into one that is now a regional destabilization. Mr. Kaur pointed out the similarities and parallels with what's going on in Iraq, and I think that he's correct to point to that in some sense, because what I've been saying all along, this is a regional destabilization. The same organization which emerged in Iraq in the early part of last decade shifted into Syria in the last couple of years. Now they've streamed back across the border into Iraq. These are not coincidences. This is not by accident. This is part of a regional strategy that they have. And moreover, this idea that we're supposed to draw a distinction between Al-Qaeda factions, jihadi factions, and Free Syrian Army, this is nonsense. The fighters who have taken up arms against the government, they are the ones who are fighting against Assad. They are the ones who are subordinated to Al-Qaeda. They are part of the same entity. And to draw these artificial distinctions, I think, is for political purposes in the Western world and nothing else.
Well, Mr. Korb, let me put this in another way. The government of President Assad, just like you, has been highlighting the presence of Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups and the danger they pose to the region. Yet we've seen the UN Security Council has been recently pondering over the wording of a resolution regarding Syria's chemical weapons arsenal. Why did the international community largely choose to ignore the pressing problem of Al-Qaeda until now, if, as you point out, it has been a problem?
Well, they have ignored it because they weren't in there to begin with. And I can't emphasize this too much. This was not a radical Al-Qaeda uprising against the Assad regime. This was people basically demanding in Syria the same thing that people in Tunisia asked for, the people in Egypt originally asked for. And rather than negotiating with them, as the Egyptians did and the Tunisians did, Assad cracked down on them and slaughtered thousands of them right in the beginning. Then when they started to fight back and it became a stalemate, that's when the Al-Qaeda groups took advantage of it, just like they did in Iraq. They were not there in the beginning. This was not an Al-Qaeda-led uprising. This was basically the oppressed majority in Syria asking for the same rights that people in most countries have.
Right, Mr. Dreitzer, you're shaking your head there in annoyance. I'd like to get your opinion on this, and let me reword another question that I wanted to put to you with regards to this. The U.S. and its regional allies, as we've seen, namely Saudi Arabia, have been pouring funds over the past 3 years and weapons to support the insurgents for months now. We've witnessed a competition between different groups for recruits, weapons, and defining the future character of Syria. And these groups, of course, include Al-Nusra Front and the ISIL. Why has this never been a concern of Western policymakers, as they were involved, as many can see clearly?
Well, I'll respond to that in a second, but I just have to point out that that Mr. Korb is, in my judgment, propagating a mythology, an absolute myth that people need to be absolutely aware of. Nobody is suggesting that the entire uprising in Syria has always been anything but Al-Qaeda. The point of the matter is Al-Qaeda and the jihadi factions, which are tied to these various intelligence networks, use that as a conduit to wage war on the people and the state of Syria. Nobody's suggesting that every single fighter has been an Al-Qaeda fighter brought in from somewhere else. The point is that an uprising, in whatever character it had initially, that uprising was used as a pretext, as it has in many other parts of the world with Al-Qaeda, used as a pretext for an invasion, an infiltration of the country for the purposes of destabilization and the creation of a safe haven. The model we want to look at is Libya. There is a direct parallel with what happened in Libya and what we've seen in Syria. The importation of radical jihadis with military training and with arms and weapons and financing in order to overthrow a government that was hostile to NATO. This is precisely the same situation we're seeing in Syria. And to portray it as something peaceful, as something anything other than a destabilization, I think is a gross distortion. Now, as to the question of Saudi Arabia, this is, of course, integral because we've seen conflicts, geopolitical conflicts, conflicts between Saudi Arabia and some of the other regional players. Of course, the one that everyone points to is Iran with regard to a proxy war in Syria. But a secondary one that we need to be looking at is Qatar, because remember that the financing for these weapons and these various networks comes both from Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And the competition between these two countries for influence and control in Syria, in Iraq, or rather in Anbar province of Iraq and elsewhere, this is what we're seeing playing out on the battlefield. And of course, it doesn't really matter whether we're making a distinction between Saudi finances and Qatari financing, because the financing is all going to the same elements, the radical elements on the ground who, as I've said again, are the only legitimate fighting force fighting against the Assad government.
Well, Mr. Dreitzer, you spoke of parallels. Now, before I go to Mr. Korb for a response, I want you to listen to this soundbite by former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Take a listen.
Let's remember here, the people we are fighting today, we funded 20 years ago. And we did it because we were locked in this struggle with the Soviet Union. They invaded Afghanistan, and we did not want to see them control Central Asia. And we went to work. And it was President Reagan, in partnership with the Congress, led by Democrats, who said, you know what? Sounds like a pretty good idea. Let's deal with the ISI and the Pakistani military, and let's go recruit these Mujahideen. And that's great. Let's get some to come from Saudi Arabia and other places, importing their Wahhabi brand of Islam, so that we can go beat the Soviet Union. And guess what? They retreated. They lost billions of dollars, and it led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. So there's a very strong argument, which is, wasn't a bad investment to end the Soviet Union, but let's be careful what we sow, because we will harvest.
Well, Mr. Korb, the role played by the U.S. in fighting the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan continues to have repercussions today, as those who the U.S. armed grew into what is today Al-Qaeda. Now, many have drawn parallels between that and what is right now happening in Syria, as the U.S. and its regional allies continue to fund different factions fighting to topple the government of President Bashar al-Assad. Why is it that the U.S. keeps making the same mistake? Why haven't the lessons from Afghanistan been learned?
Well, I think basically in Afghanistan, the United States basically knew that they did not want the Soviet Union during the height of the Cold War to move into Afghanistan and then maybe into Iran and into the other Persian Gulf states. So we were willing to work with groups that were opposed to the Soviet Union. Just like in World War II, we allied ourselves with the Soviet Union to fight Hitler. So that's what they did. Now, in terms of the blowback, nobody could have anticipated what was happening. You can go back and say, well, you should have, but you know, it was very, very hard. Al-Qaeda was basically just getting going back then. And people forget that Al-Qaeda went to Afghanistan after they were thrown out of other countries in Africa. That was not their first choice to go to, but they were evicted. So I think we're kind of mixing up a lot of things here. And Al-Qaeda's rallying cry actually became the first Gulf War when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, and the international community, including Syria, I might add, and Saudi Arabia, worked to throw him out of Kuwait. Osama bin Laden didn't want these outside powers coming in to help the Saudis, and he used that as a rallying cry. So you're mixing up an awful lot of issues here. The United States has learned this lesson. That's why we're not involved directly in Syria, even though there's been a lot of pressure on the United States to do it. And General Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff right now, looking at the situation which we described here today, say we don't, you know, no matter who wins, it's not going to be good for us given what's happened. The United States was getting along fine with Assad. The Bush administration had opened up diplomatic relations with him. The Turks were brokering peace talks between Israel and Syria, before the Arab Spring came. This is the cause of this. It's not an attempt by the United States or other countries to destabilize the region. It's the Arab Spring, which has led people there to demand the same rights that we're privileged enough to have in the United States.
Okay, before I get a response from Mr. Draitzer, we have some viewers that are joining in the conversation through social networking websites. Let's take a listen to some of the comments they've put up.
Most of the educated Muslims know this is not Shia Sunni. Rather, it is international conspiracy to change Syrian regime in favor of the US and Israel. The major purpose of America and Israel, along with Saudi Arabia, is to divide the Muslim nation by causing conflicts between Shia and Sunni Muslims. But we, the Muslim nation, should be aware of this conspiracy. The US underestimated the crisis in Syria. They view it like the one in Libya.
All right, Mr. Draitzer, let me put this question to you now. There are, as you could see, our viewers do believe that there are foreign hands involved in what is taking place in Syria. And you did mention the role of one of America's biggest allies in the region, Saudi Arabia. Why isn't the Saudi role being given urgency amid the terrorist attacks in Russia, Lebanon, and Iraq? The Russian president has alluded to the fact that the responsibility of these terrorist attacks goes back to the very same elements.
Well, I just want to point out to begin with that it is not a, quote, belief that there are foreign elements involved in the conflict in Syria. This is an incontrovertible and inescapable fact. And if you don't want to take my word for it, you can find it clearly documented in the New York Times in June of 2012, the role of the CIA using the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood to funnel weapons and arms into Syria in order to topple the Assad regime. There are countless other examples from many other news outlets, and I'd be happy to provide them in writing to anybody who wants them. But the point is, this isn't a belief. This is a fact. This is what is happening in the region. And to say that it is somehow purely an indigenous uprising is, in my opinion, to be completely oblivious to the facts that are staring you in the face. With the question of Saudi Arabia, this is integral because, of course, Saudi Arabia is the regional client state, along with Israel and, you know, certain other elements of the United States. They are part of the U.S., NATO, Israel sphere of influence that exists. They are an integral part of that, not only because of the oil resources that they have, but also the incredible financial possibilities, the financing networks, and the terror networks that they control. Remember that Wahhabism, this scourge that has been spread throughout the Islamic world, Wahhabism is centered in Saudi Arabia. It is a creation of the House of Saud for the purposes of perpetuating their own regime. Remember that the Saudi regime has attempted to oppress its own population in ways far more devastating than anything that ever happened in Syria. And yet Saudi Arabia, because it is an integral part of the U.S. imperial system, it is somehow above reproach. Now, we should remember also that Saudi Arabia is an integral part of what is happening in Syria for the purposes of bringing in the weapons. Those
right.
weapons purchased on black markets that need to get into Syria use Saudi Arabia as the conduit.
Okay, I'm afraid time's gotten the better of us. That was the founder of StopImperialism.com, Eric Draitzer, joining us from New York. And from Washington was Lawrence J. Korb with the Center for American Progress and also former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense. Gentlemen, I'd like to thank you both for joining us here on this edition of The Debate. And thank you, viewers, for your insight and participation as well. It's from me and the entire team here in Tehran. It's goodbye.